Originally speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio, I'm Chris Nolte. Coming up on Thursday at 11:30 in the morning until about 1 is going to be a very special luncheon that's going to happen at the Avalon Manor, which is based in Hobart. Hobart or Merrillville, whichever, I think, depending on however you want to look at it. But it's there along US 30. And the folks from Northwest Indiana Forum are getting together with a lot of other members of the public and community leaders to celebrate a year of collaboration and transformation. And it's all about a big project that has been underway. And with us to talk about the project and about the luncheon coming up too, we have Heather Ennis, who is the CEO of the Northwest Indiana Forum. And Heather, thank you for stopping by the studios.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris.
Well, this project is called, and I guess the luncheon is kind of that way too, because it's all related. It's called Ignite the Region. Northwest Indiana Strategy for Economic Transformation. That's the name of the project, and it sounds like it has been, to say the least, a very ambitious project.
Absolutely. So we kicked off the plan a year ago. So we spent the year prior to that doing the planning and working with all of the regional stakeholders in order to craft this plan. And the really exciting thing about this plan is it's not a sit-on-the-shelf kind of plan. It is a plan that has action items and people meeting monthly, moving those action items along. So pretty exciting stuff.
How would you say it ranks with other probably similar discussions, maybe even plans that have been done up here in the region in the past?
You know, we really hadn't seen a full economic development strategy done previously that had an action item based to it. There have been a lot of studies done, but not an end. RDA has a strategic plan, and NERPC has a strategic plan, and Center of Workforce has a strategic plan. But really doing one full plan that incorporates all of those organizations and the parts that they play in economic development for the region really was kind of orchestrating the ballet, so to speak.
What seemed to be the incentive? Was it just a matter of to bring all these individual plans together and create something that would be more region-wide, actually, rather than just by agency or organization?
Yes, and you know, as we've talked about previously, we were seeing declining populations. We were seeing declining per capita income in the region, and those statistics aren't one that we want to live with. So How do you turn that ship around? Well, you don't do it very well if you don't have a coordinated plan. And so really getting everybody on the same page, aligning what each organization is doing. There's a lot of great work being done throughout the region, but making sure that we're doing it in concert with one another is critically important. And so the Ignite umbrella brings together all of these regional organizations to talk about, okay, here are the things that one region is doing and being successful at and moving the ball forward on. Here are the things that Center of Workforce Innovations is doing. How do they align with one another, and how can we use economies of scale and better synergy in order to move the ball faster?
I know that from the information that's out there from the forum is that this plan is really kind of focusing on five specific areas, and they include business development and marketing, entrepreneurship and innovation, talent and placemaking, and infrastructure. And that's quite a bit when you take even just one of those. Like you say, you're talking about something, trying to judge what's been done or hasn't been done in the past and try to bring it to the future, isn't it?
Yeah, so really the best part of the plan is that it does cover so much space. Economic development isn't just solely about business attraction or solely about business retention and expansion. Talent plays such a critical point in trying to attract companies and trying to attract businesses to the region, trying to help the businesses that are here to grow and to be able to maintain their workforce or to educate their workforce for the jobs of tomorrow. So there's a lot of integral parts in an economic development plan and really being able to craft it all and roll it in together.
And I guess it is a pretty big plan because it is a pretty big topic to have to take on. I know if you go on the Northwest Indiana Forum website and actually look at what's out there to see right now, I'm not going to print it out because it would be 92 pages.
And that's without the implementation matrix.
That's right. Yeah, there are more appendices and indexes to put in with that, too. So it's a lot out there to be sure to be covering all of these topics. So how many people and how many organizations had to get together over the last year or so to help bring it to what will come out here eventually?
So when we first rolled the plan out, we met with about 500 different folks. We did 50 roundtable and one-on-one meetings talking with all different business sectors, manufacturing, government, entrepreneurs, innovators, healthcare. So we ran the gamut of the industries and sectors across the region and educators and the like, and really trying to make sure that we covered all the bases from the stakeholder group. And then we sent out a public survey as well. So there were about 500 folks from the public that commented as well on what they wanted to see out of this plan. And as we said, we rolled this out last September. It's been a year in the making, and we've had a lot of activity around the implementation matrix and big ideas that are coming out of this plan.
What are some of the things that members of the public have had to say, the ones that you've invited and the ones maybe have had an opportunity to put in their voice into what they know, at least during the process, have been what they like about it, what they'd like to see done here in Northwest Indiana to make it easier to bring new businesses and industry in, to keep people here in Northwest Indiana in the jobs and bring more jobs to Northwest Indiana and along all the other facets of this plan as well.
Yeah, people are really excited that we're working collaboratively. Obviously, you know, the forum is shepherding this project, but this is not the forum's project alone. So people are excited to see the region working collaboratively and to have more things done as a collective group and really being able to look at the long-term outlook for the region. There, you know, the people that have come to us have said how excited they are to see a well thought out plan of, hey, these are the next 5 years worth of steps that we need to take. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a living, breathing plan. We might look at some of these things tomorrow and say, okay, well, number two and number six under these under the business development and marketing strategy might not be applicable or might need to have five additional steps done before we can get to that top step. So, you know, really it's a living, breathing document that we're celebrating this coming Thursday at the Avalon. So we're very excited about that luncheon and to be able to continue to roll out the success and the progress that's being made around this plan. There are, you know, probably 50 to 75 folks in the region that are doggedly working on the progress of this, you know, 40 to 50 that are meeting on a monthly and quarterly basis just to make sure that they're reporting and updating. Mm-hmm. But then all of the organization's time and energy that's being put into it as well. So it's pretty exciting.
For the session coming up here on Thursday, the luncheon that's going to be held at the Avalon Manor, you mentioned there'll be a lot of people that are certainly going to be involved. It's not going to be like your typical meeting where you bring a bunch of people together for a meal and then an opportunity to kind of do a glossy over covering of whatever is going to be presented. They get a chance to actually have had a chance in many cases participating in putting this thing together and have a chance to I guess, talk more about it and find out more about it in detail.
Yeah, each of the pillars will be separated out around the room. And it's not a plated lunch. There'll be like luncheon stations around the room as well. So each of the sections will come and we'll be able to talk to, if your key interest is talent, you'll be able to talk to the folks that are working on talent and find out what strategies are happening under there and really figure out where, if you'd like to engage, how you could engage. And then business development and marketing will have its own pillar set up. And we will do a formal presentation where the whole room has the opportunity to hear about different things happening under these pillars, but each individual pillar will have its own station so people can dig into specifically what's of interest to them.
Now, are there still opportunities for folks that may want to attend the luncheon and catch all this information on Thursday?
Absolutely. So they can visit our website, which is www.nwiforum.org. And under our events section, you can just click on that and you can register there. So we're still taking registrants and would be happy to have anyone who wanted to come out.
Well, aside from this major project that you've all been spending a year plus in working on, the Ignite the Region plan, what else is the Northwest Indiana Forum been working on these days?
So, you know, it's so funny. We hosted 13 events last year in addition to the 50 roundtable meetings. We helped to attract $1.16 billion of investment to the region and over 1,800 committed jobs. We've got a lot of projects in the pipeline right now that we're working with the local economic development organizations and the municipalities to help bring to Northwest Indiana. And one of the things that the forum is specifically focused on is the business development and marketing component. So mm-hmm. there's we've been involved with scheduling and attending 20 outreach trips throughout the country this year, too, to go out and meet with companies and site selectors and brokers and tell them the story of Northwest Indiana.
Now, I wouldn't ask the question, although if you want to tell me, that's fine. We know that there's a company from the Bridgeport neighborhood in Chicago which has taken over the space in what used to be the Lear Corporation plant in Hammond. They moved into that facility and are starting up operation over time and going to add staff members. Are companies like that the ones that maybe that over time that you all go out and with others, and maybe certainly Mayor McDermott in Hammond and other people in the city of Hammond, but in a particular project, to attract, to get them to talk, look at Northwest Indiana in general and the cities in particular to show them how this might work for their particular business?
Absolutely. The tax climate in Indiana is ideal. And as you know, the climate in Illinois is rough. We do not want this to be a zero-sum game. You know, we thrive on the fact that we're our proximity to the city of Chicago and what that means to us. So we really appreciate that synergy. But our tax climate is such that businesses are going to be attracted to our area. And we do target market companies from the Illinois area. But we target market companies from all over the country as well. So we do have a list of target industries that we're going after. So trying to continue to build on the strengths of the region through the agri-value chain, through manufacturing, through logistics and transportation. You know, we've got an awful lot of resources here in the region. And so we're very excited about the opportunities that are wonderful tax climate office offers for us. But
are you getting some attention out of the folks in Indianapolis, in particular the lawmakers? Of course, the local lawmakers are more than involved in this, but do they get to pass the word on to their colleagues elsewhere? Or do the folks at the State House often check in to, at least to see what's going on up here because of projects like Ignite the Region?
Yes, absolutely. And Kay Nelson and myself on our team at the forum are registered lobbyists. So we spend a decent amount of time downstate advocating for economic development mm-hmm. opportunities through the legislature. And we're very lucky to have a great legislative delegation up here in Northwest Indiana. I think the state is paying more and more attention to Northwest Indiana as we continue to get our house in order and continue to grow upon the successes that we've had previously. The state is recognizing that we mean business.
Did you have some opportunities in this past legislative session to get with lawmakers during the session and talk about some of these issues that we're bringing up now that's going to come up and maybe eventually in the overall plan?
Absolutely. And there's more items that are in the plan that we'll add to our legislative agenda for this year. So we had opportunity to work on the data center legislation last year. Also had the opportunity to work on the Economic Development Omnibus Bill with the IEDC and the Indiana Economic Development Association, which is all of our economic development peers across the state. So really great opportunities at the state level to be able to participate. I'm the vice chair of the Indiana Economic Development Association board and was their legislative chair last year. Mm-hmm. So the more that we can be down at the State House speaking and put a Northwest Indiana face to these kind of issues, the more exciting it is for the region.
That's great to hear. Thank you very much for stopping in, Heather, and talk about not only the ambitious plan that is being worked on and coming up here with the presentation to all the people involved in the Ignite the Region luncheon coming up on Thursday, but in general, the efforts of the forum and all the other groups here in Northwest Indiana trying to get more business and get the right kind of business for Northwest Indiana. Thanks for stopping by today.
Thanks again, Chris. We are really excited about the progress that we're making. They say, you know, the best time to plant a tree is was 20 years ago. The second best time to plant a tree is today. So we're excited to be helping with our other partners to move the ball forward on this project.
Heather, thank you for coming by. Appreciate your visit today and the information.
Thanks, Chris.
Heather Ennis is the CEO of the Northwest Indiana Forum, and you're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Our next guest has basically characterized the church and the school that he went to and does go to now as having a stellar history. And we're referring to the St. John's Evangelical Lutheran Church and School in Gary. In fact, the church has the city's oldest congregation. Some of the baptismal records, I understand, go back to the 1860s. And it was even planned when George Toll came up with the town of Tolston. Back in 1853, he set aside some room for a church and a cemetery. And now the church and the school that came later, of course, after the church, is asking for your help as a citizen of Northwest Indiana. And with us to talk about it, Dennis Hodges. Thanks for joining us today, Dennis.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, thanks for the information that we had and some other information, too. I was not aware, and although you mentioned later, that since you were certainly a longtime member of the congregation there at St. John's Lutheran Church and the school itself. You were a member of the last graduating class of the old school. So
yeah.
it's been very close to you for many, many, many years.
Very much. The 1 to 8th grade were very memorable for me and my fellow students. And the church had a lot of youth activity at the time, and it was just a real growing experience, growing in faith, that is.
Now, we know that there have been many students that have gone through the school, and, of course, many people that have attended the church and attend the church up to, I guess, to today. What are some of the things that you're hoping, and you and your colleagues there at the church and and the school are trying to do to help build the history a bit longer? You've asked for some information and trying to track some people down. Tell us about what the mission is.
Well, we're looking for students, former students of the school, former members of St. John's Lutheran Church, and former residents of the Gary-Tolleson District to come to a reunion dinner on October 26th at the Gary Railcats Baseball Stadium. And the Railcats are donating a free ticket to the 2020 ball game season. Mayor-elect Jerome Pierce will be speaking at the event, and of course, we open it up to the public for that reason.
The church, I guess, from the information that we know, is that it's the oldest Christian church north of Highway 30.
Yes.
That's obviously so because it's in the Tolleson neighborhood of Gary. And it's certainly the sanctuary certainly is befitting of a historic church. For folks that have never been by the church, tell us what it looks like and the sanctuary in particular.
Well, the current church sanctuary is 105 years old this year. It has some beautiful stained glass windows that are worth tens of thousands of dollars, an antique baptismal font, and an antique altar that came out of the old church buildings. It was born of German immigrants back in the 1860s,
mm-hmm.
and it's been lively ever since.
I guess many of the members, going back into the 1860s, I guess were ending up workers at the steel mill when U.S. Steel was created.
Oh, very much. They were played a primary role in building and developing U.S. Steel and other business entities in this area.
How did the school get started? Obviously, we mentioned earlier here in our conversation about the fact that George Toll had set aside land for a church and a cemetery, which is something typical, but how did the school itself get started?
Well, the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod is second only to the Roman Catholic Church in terms of elementary education, and the founding fathers way back when recognized that education was to be Christian education was to be a very important part of the church agenda. So the school came about probably about 20, 30 years later from the original charters. But it graduated many students who went on to stellar positions in this society, and many of whom just became good friends over the years.
Now, how many students that were going to the school happened to live in the neighborhood? I guess that this was back at a time, even I'm sure when you were a young student, that they didn't have any school bus routes running in the city of Gary at the time, maybe to support some of the city schools, but how about the parochial schools? Or did all the students come in from the neighborhood?
Well, the Tolleson area packed the student population. There were no buses, of course, and most of us enjoyed the pleasure of walking to school from our residence. As far as living in this area still, that's what we're trying to find out. How many would recognize this opportunity to come together and celebrate the 149 years of the church going into the 150th year next year.
Now tell us about the congregation at the church these days.
Well, as I said, the church was born of German immigrants. Today, it's about 50, almost all black members, who lovingly keep the church and its grounds in tip-top shape. It's a huge responsibility because the church is so old, but it still looks very clean and very presentable for Christian worship. Over the course of the anniversary year, we hope to raise both finances and the membership at the church. When I'm in Paris, France, I worship at the American Church in Paris, and there the beacon, the steeple, is very similar to the steeple in at St. John's, and it's called the Beacon of Hope. Mm-hmm. And we see the St. John's steeple as a beacon of hope for that community.
I understand that there's been a lot of work done recently here to get caught up and getting the history notes caught up, I guess, from over the recent years as well as the past. Tell us about the efforts that the research has done so far, and I guess some of the end results going to come about at the dinner coming up on October 20th.
Yes, we have students from Belfast University and a couple of professors researching the history of the church, and that will be presented at the dinner. The Brouwer Museum of Art at the university has a strong interest in the artifacts, and we have written to the Art Institute of Chicago to look at and possibly appraise the artwork. We believe it's very valuable, and it's probably the church could be a museum of religious and church art.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, if anybody's interested in finding out more, I know certainly about the church and about the school, and in particular about the October 20th event that's coming up here to celebrate the anniversary, 150th anniversary coming up in 2020, I know, for this church, how can they find out more information, Dennis?
Please call me, Dennis Hodges, at 219-252-2397 or email wdennis.hodges@gmail.com.
Well, Dennis, thank you very much for the information, and we hope that there is a good crowd that comes to the Railcat Stadium on October 20th to celebrate the impending 150th anniversary, but certainly 149th anniversary of the St. John's Lutheran School and Church in Gary, and we appreciate you talking about today.
I'm glad to be a part of it. Thank you.
You're listening to Regionally Speaking. Well, we've learned lately a little bit more about the proposed Hard Rock Casino that will be built on land in Gary and how many additional jobs that will come about with that new casino that will be built, and the possibility, too, that some of these people that will take those jobs might get training at Ivy Tech Community College. Ivy Tech's Lake County campus is planning to have, again, the return of casino dealer training courses at the East Chicago location. And to tell us more about it today, here's Dee Dee White, who's a workforce consultant for Ivy Tech. Dee Dee, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
First of all, I guess this all, of course, was planned long before that the word finally came out about the new online casino in Gary. But this has to be a perfect time to find out about the possibility of what could be hundreds of new jobs and the fact that there are many people that will need to be trained for these jobs out there and how Ivy Tech can fit into all of this.
We are doing casino dealer training at Ivy Tech. This is what we call an open enrollment class, where we're inviting anybody from the public to come in and learn how to be a dealer. We're offering both blackjack training and craps training. They're considered non-credit classes, but if somebody wants to continue their education in a hospitality pathway, we can actually crosswalk these classes into credit, mm-hmm. so that they can, ultimately start with a few credits in a hospitality pathway.
That's very important because that's the gateway, I suppose, certainly to better jobs, and may even get somebody a good initial job to be sure if you have that that hospitality degree.
For sure. But, you know, the nice thing is the casino dealers, they make a very good wage. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, they're anywhere between $38,000 to $40,000 a year.
Course is going to be set up not only to train people about the games themselves too, but also that you're setting up an opportunity that if the student happens to complete the course, that they'll at least get a chance to be interviewed, I understand.
You bet. We have it set up right now where they will definitely be interviewed by at least one casino. Mm-hmm. In the casino business, it's actually called an audition. So they will have at least one audition with a casino.
What kind of work in particular to set up the course itself? How much work did you have at Ivy Tech Community College to be able to get the casinos interested in this and, of course, people involved in helping train them?
You know what? It's all about community. You know, it's all about collaborating and just finding out where those high-demand jobs are. And when you look across, you know, so you go from Joliet all the way to New Buffalo in Michigan. Mm-hmm. That's about a 100-mile area right there. There are thousands of jobs, across that area just in casinos. Now, it's not all dealer jobs, but, dealer jobs, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of jobs that are available, and again, at that higher wage. So, you know, the work that went into getting this training going again, it was just all a collaborative effort on, you know, just figuring out, like I said, where those jobs are and, finding instructors and getting the equipment we need, like, you know, tables and, you know, the blackjack tables and craps tables. And so this is all going to be housed at our East Chicago location here at our Ivy Tech Lake County campus. The blackjack training is an 8-week course. It'll run 4 hours a day, Monday through Friday. And then our craps course is a 10-week course, and that will also run 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. And they'll be offered at different times. So we're going to do, you know, we'll try some day classes that will be very family-friendly as far as, you know, if we have folks that have children that want to, you know, take care of their kids in the morning, you know, get them off to school and then come in for the training. We'll do like a 9-to-1 or a 10-to-2 training so that they could be home for their kids in the afternoon. There are also possible scholarship opportunities for students and the tuition. All they'd have to do is, you know, get in touch with us, and then we'll get them in touch with the people in the community that may be willing to sponsor them. We also have possible daycare, free daycare in place for some of the participants.
Tell us a little bit about the instructors. You have to have certain specialties in this particular case, people who are very, very trained in not only the games but how casinos work, don't you?
You bet. So we already have in line qualified instructors to teach these classes. These are people that have worked or currently work at casinos, so they understand, they understand that environment. They obviously understand the games. They've trained in the past. So we're really excited about the folks that we have in place.
Well, enrollment's underway right now for Ivy Tech Community College courses, and this one in particular dealing with the casino dealer training that's going to happen at the East Chicago location. If anybody's interested, how can they find out more information now?
Yeah, so they can call the Lake County Campus Workforce Alignment Division. at 219-981-4402, or they can email us at nwcorporatecollege@ivytech.edu.
Well, Dee Dee, thanks you for the information today. The new course is coming out with Ivy Tech Community College, one in particular that's going to fit in very nicely for someone who is looking for a change of career or just an opportunity to get a good career working with casinos, with the work that's going to be happening here in Northwest Indiana for new casinos that are being built, and no doubt we'll see improvements of the other places along the way too. Thank you for the info, and we hope to have you back to talk with us again. Dee Dee White is a workforce consultant with Ivy Tech Community College here in Lake County. The world of computer information systems is one of the fastest growing, it seems, in the world of technology these days. And that we're talking about not only the technology itself, but also the opportunity for great employment opportunities to type my work. It's growing across not only Northwest Indiana and the Chicagoland area, but around the nation. And now IU Northwest at the Gary is offering a master's degree in computer information systems. Let's find out more about it and check in with the chairman of the Department of Computer Information Systems on the Gary campus, Professor Bakra Kapardi. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
This has to be a very exciting opportunity to be able to expand the curriculum on campus to bring more students in, not only the ones that are attending IU Northwest now, but even some people who have attended other colleges, universities, have experience, want to pick up more experience and more opportunities in the future. How did the IU Northwest have a chance to be able to expand so much into these fast-growing professions like CIS?
Oh, yes. We are current with what we are doing. And actually, there are a lot of people in the region and in the nation who are already working with computers. They did not have training in computers, but they're already working with computers. As you know, everyone needs to work with a computer in any job. So what we are offering is anybody who has experience, some experience in computers, or wanting to get experience, get expertise in computers, they'll be able to get into this program. They should have a bachelor's degree. That's all we ask for. And once they know that they have some experience, they have intention of updating their skills in computers, they can come and join our program, and we will be able to give them conditional admission. You know, they don't have an undergraduate degree in computer science or related field, but they have an undergraduate degree. So then they can apply for this program, and we will give them basic training first and then put them in the master's program. And the master's program, of course, will provide them with leadership skills and also what is needed in the present world. That's what it's going to provide. That's what we wish to provide for this region.
So you're looking basically for students. If you have computer science skills, that's great. But just as long as you have a sharp head on your shoulders and you have the problem solving skills, regardless of whatever degree you happen to have, that's a good way to at least get you started. And then the rest of it can come by attending the courses.
That is correct. So they have to attend these courses. They will get the skills. We have the expertise. We have professors who are current in the field. And we'll be making them leaders in computer science fields, basically. And this is not a theoretical program, but this is a more job-oriented program. That they can get this degree and get into leadership roles.
Now, we know here in Northwest Indiana in particular that we have this great opportunity that is developing up on the shores of Lake Michigan with the Digital Crossroads that is opening up in Hammond. Will a degree like this help someone who's interested in getting involved in the data mining industries, such as this be, I guess, get into that work and learn more about it by attending the courses at IU Northwest?
Yes, exactly. Actually, Chris, I saw that news item about one of the data hubs, I believe. They're opening in Hammond. And of course, we'll be providing expertise for them. And in this region, there are lots of industries, lots of companies that are actually into data management and systems and providing services, IT services. There are lots of, I know many companies in the region, in Northwest Indiana, that are actually providing these services and IT services. So we will be providing leadership skilled personnel for this industry. Yes, that's correct.
How much work has it taken so far in the process to be able to come up with the curriculum and all the, to be able to get this new master's program underway? It is not something that happens overnight. You have to plan these things out, of course. How much planning has it happened to take it to this point that you're able to offer the new master's degree course this fall?
All right. I'm glad that you asked this question. It has taken a lot of effort. We did surveys of the students, surveys of the companies in the region, and it took about 2 years to develop this program, and we are current, and we are going ahead with it, and the Indiana Commission for Higher Education gave us the approval, and Indiana University gave us the approval, I mean the whole system, and we hope to provide the excellent skills here.
Now, once again, will you run down the list of some of the requirements for admission? If there's anyone out there, regardless of whether they're a computer science graduate, whether they've taken other courses and the like elsewhere, so they might be interested in getting a master's degree in CIS.
Right. Okay. We want them to have an undergraduate degree in any field. And if they have some skills, we will give credit for those skills, computer skills. We will give credit for them. And then we'll put them in the required courses that will bring them up to speed with what we are going to teach in the master's program. And once they come up to the speed, they'll be able to take their courses in the computer science master's program, and they should be able to get the degree, right? And no GRE is required. Mm-hmm. We do not require a GRE score. So anybody with the intention, with the focus, they'll be able to get into this program.
Now, as you've been working through the process of getting all the accreditation and the approval from the boards of trustees down the line, how many students seem to be interested in getting involved in the coursework this fall?
We got a lot of interest from the region. We are just opening up our system, our online admission system, and we have not seen any students yet, but we hope to see a lot of students in our program.
What a wonderful opportunity for employment here in Northwest Indiana in particular, with such a fast-growing industry as computer information systems, and as we mentioned before, with the opportunities that will be opening up with the new Digital Crossroads Data Center on the Lake Michigan Lakeside there in Hammond. A lot of things that students here in Northwest Indiana that have the computer skills or the computer interest, to be sure, can take advantage of with this new master's degree in computer information systems. Professor Capardi, thank you very much for spending time to talk about this, and we hope that there is a great interest that continues not only in this opening fall semester, but in the semesters to come.
I hope so, and Chris, thank you for putting me onto this program. We do hope to have a good response, and we hope that everybody will be able to use this opportunity.
Professor Bakra Capardi is the chairman of the Department of Computer Information Systems at IU Northwest in Gary. Rural and mid-sized municipalities across Indiana are seeking ways to attract new visitors and residents, and with them, economic development. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Taylor Haggerty reports that the Benton County town of Fowler, which is just south of Kentland, spent the day Saturday trying to scare up new business with the help of an unconventional event, a paranormal convention.
A little less than 2,300 people live in Fowler. The town runs along U.S. Highway 52, just northwest of Lafayette. But still, Town Council President Linda Briette says there's not much outside investment. There are plenty of buildings in the downtown that could house businesses or people, but many of them sit empty. Briette says a few have even collapsed from neglect in recent years.
And it's a shame because they're awesome buildings, and all it would take is a little bit of extra tuck pointing and just keeping that up to date to keep those buildings standing.
One such building, the Fowler Theater, was nearly torn down 2 decades ago. It's now registered as a historic landmark after a 14-year renovation project.
People weren't going to movies any longer. No one was investing into its longevity. And in fact, they were going to trash the marquee or sell it if they could.
That's Dwight Sneven, president of the Prairie Preservation Guild. The guild runs the theater, which has single showings of films each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. All revenue goes toward preservation. And Sneven says there are large bills ahead, including roof repairs. This past weekend, the theater hosted a less conventional audience, paranormal investigators. Sneathan himself is a member of 765 Paranormal, a nonprofit investigative team.
So far, we've had groups that have been successful in coming in and leaving at least feeling like there's something going on at the theater.
So Sneathan tried to capitalize on that with a convention called Freak Out at the Fowler. The Saturday event featured free tours of historic locations, as well as documentary screenings. A ticketed overnight event included an investigation of the theater, the Old County Jail, and Fowler's local opera house for $50 a ticket. 45 spots were available for the overnight stay, 30 sold.
Something just went over my foot. What did you feel?
I felt
Tiffany Aiken is head investigator for 765 Paranormal. She says these conventions are growing in popularity, and her organization sees that as an opportunity to aid in historic preservation in places like Fowler.
Fowler has an absolutely rich and wonderful history, you know, and I'd hate to see it just become, you know, a stop sign in the middle of a cornfield.
Free tours during the day had about 20 people each, spreading the word about the desire to preserve Fowler's history.
We can move on to the next location, which is the old Benton County Jail.
Revenue from the weekend's events won't be enough to cover a new roof for the theater or repairs to the jail and opera house. But urban planning researcher Norman Walzer says highlighting local lore might be the right path to development.
If there's something in the community that makes it unique, that's really a good approach.
Walzer works at Northern Illinois University's Center for Governmental Studies. He says small, niche events like ghost hunts can bring more visitors over time.
If you have a variety of things, maybe each one is a little bit smaller, but you're basically attracting a broader number of people.
The city arranged a sidewalk sale for the morning of Freak Out at the Fowler, and about 20 vendors set up along 5th Street, but went back inside when the rain began. Though traffic increased, sales didn't necessarily flow.
This morning, it's probably been about 500% more than normal. So we are really delighted that we've had this much traffic.
And the lady next to us, she sold $11. She beat us.
That was Prairie Belle's boutique owner, Chrissy McCutcheon, and vendor Kathleen Comer. Town Council President Linda Briette concedes officials do struggle to advertise to out-of-town visitors who might come to events.
Unless you're driving through Fowler, you're not going to know what's going on. So we need to probably find a different way to advertise to reach out to more people.
Officials are hopeful the convention will come back next year, but neither it nor the sidewalk sale generated enough traffic to fund even the theater's roof replacement, which is due in the next few years. And the town must still find ways to increase population and secure business investment. For that, it'll likely need more than just event-driven visitors. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Taylor Haggerty.
Once again, Rose Holman Institute of Technology in Terre Haute is offering up an opportunity for homework help for math and science subjects to Northwest Indiana students. We have with us to talk about the famous program known as Ask Rose, we have the director of Ask Rose, Susan Smith Rhodes, with us. Susan, thank you for joining us today on the program.
Well, thank you for encouraging your students.
It's been around for a while. Give us a little history lesson.
Ask Rose actually started in 1991 by Rose Holman. We had students who were calling and asking for some homework help, and so we decided that we would start Ask Rose. And it's a free service to helping students with their math and science. We focus on grades 6 through 12, and students can call us, they can chat, or they can email and get the help that they need.
How many tutors are available out there each evening that you make this opportunity available?
More than 30 tutors available each evening. We have 140 tutors who actually work with the program. All of our tutors are Rose Holman students, so they're math, science, and engineering majors, and so they're very technically qualified. They also complete a training process and with communication skills. So their goal is to help students with their math and science the way that those subjects are taught in schools today.
Now, if a student has some problems that they're working on for an assignment that they have to turn in the next day, they've done all right to a point, but they've gotten stuck, how can they contact the folks at Ask Rose, and what kind of help can you offer them?
They can contact us at 877-ASK-ROSE, just a phone call away, or they can go to our website at askrose.org, and they can chat or email. and we're open Sundays through Thursdays. We are in Eastern Time, so it's 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time or 6 to 9 Central Time.
When you have so many students involved with such an effort to try to help students out on the phone or online to get their math or science questions answered, what kind of resources do you all have to work with to try to get those answers?
Well, we have a lot of computer resources. We also have math and science textbooks for the state of Indiana. But if a student is also just working on a worksheet, the student can send us the worksheet and submit that to us. So we want to make sure that the student is comfortable, and we'll help the student in the manner in which the student is most comfortable. We also have about 500 online resources that can be found on our website.
Wow. Now, with all that help that you can offer up to students, there has to be some good news that comes back to you after getting a student out of a particularly tough problem. Do you ever get any word back on thank you for helping me out?
Yes, we do. We do assessments every evening of the program, and we'll ask students, did the tutor spend enough time helping you? Could you answer a similar problem? And our assessment shows that 99% of the students say they would use the service again and that they're very satisfied.
That's wonderful news to hear, and it's always out there, available. Once again, this 877-ASK-ROSE, that's on the phone, or you can go to the Ask Rose website, which is askrose.org. And Susan Smith-Rhodes with Rose Holman Institute of Technology, thank you for joining us and telling us about, once again, a very popular and very informative and helpful program that will help high school students out with their math and science work. It's time for another edition of Eye on the Arts, and here's John Kane with South Shore Arts.
Joining me for this edition of Eye on the Arts is Laurie Frankie Poles, who is a volunteer at the Art Barn School of Art out in rural Valparaiso.
Yes.
And Laurie, welcome to Eye on the Arts, first of all.
Thank you.
And I'm excited to share with you that I just recently went to the Art Barn for the first time in my life. It was just about a month ago.
Okay.
And we had a luncheon there, like a regional arts luncheon of various people who are comprised of artists and arts organization personnel, volunteers, what have you. And I have always heard of the Art Barn, Jan Sullivan, our founder.
Mm-hmm.
She was a guest of Eye on the Arts on both the television. I don't think she was ever on the radio, but she was on the television version of Eye on the Arts. Lots of fun. She was a fun lady. And I was sad that I had never been there. And it's so wonderful.
Isn't it awesome?
It has such a cool feel. I loved the exhibit. The juried exhibit was up at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a chipmunk ran up my leg when I was leaving. I screamed
oh, no.
like a terrified child. And
it was probably our resident bunny, Marshmallow.
No, I saw him too.
Okay.
Or is Marshmallow a girl?
It's a girl.
A girl.
A little white bunny.
I saw Marshmallow. And then there were chickens.
Yep.
Lots of chickens. And we parked out on the field, and
yeah.
A hawk was circling overhead as I walked from my car to the.
It is truly a bit of nature. It's 69 acres of just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful area for artists and craftsmen.
Now, are you an artist and craftsman?
I am. I'm an oil painter.
Oh, wonderful.
Budding was for years, and now just kind of getting back into it again, and it got my inspiration from the Art Barn.
So you have something called Art Blitz coming
yes, we
up
do.
At the end of September. What is it?
Art Blitz is actually a dedication to Jan Sullivan, which you mentioned here recently.
Mm-hmm.
But Art Blitz itself is a festival that is on our grounds. We are 69 acres of wonderful farmland. The Art Barn itself is a renovated century-old barn, which we house, mm-hmm. our art gallery. But mm-hmm. Art Blitz has been going on actually for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Some of your listeners might recognize it. It used to be called the Sunflower Festival.
Oh, yes.
And we had a very large plot of sunflowers. But over the last 3 years, in kind of respect for Jan Sullivan and her dedication to the arts, the focus for the Art Blitz Festival has really changed to really put more emphasis on providing inspiration and love for the arts for people that come and visit us.
Mm-hmm.
So the Art Blitz is actually held on September 21st and 22nd. It's mm-hmm. Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And what happens at the festival?
Well, we have artists and craftsmen from all over Northwest Indiana that mm-hmm. are there with us that day, mm-hmm. and our guests can actually interact with those artists and actually experience, maybe pick up a paintbrush for the first time, mm-hmm. and actually take part in a little mini class. Uh-huh. We're going to have weavers there. We have Doonland plein air painters that will be set up all around the grounds, mm-hmm. and they'll be showcasing their different mediums, whether it's oil painting, whether it's watercolors, whatever the case may be. And then we also are going to have our ceramic studio, which is new for the Art Barn. That right. will be open, and our guests can actually go in and try their hand at making something with clay.
Yeah.
And then we also, during since the 20th and or the, excuse me, the 21st and 22nd is actual International Peace Day, we're going to be painting a peace pole,
oh.
and we're going to be asking our folks that come visit us to help us create this wonderful peace pole that will then be a permanent structure at the Art Barn.
That's nice. That's a wonderful sentiment.
It's very much interactive. You know, we want people to experience art in its true form and hopefully inspire them to carry it forward in some way.
Now, are there going to be nibbles?
There is. Oh, you can't have a festival without good food. Good food and music, actually. But no, we will have food vendors there from
good.
The area.
Good.
And then we also are going to have a live music stage.
Wonderful.
And that will be also showcasing local talent. And then on Sunday afternoon, one of our bands that is very well known in the area, it's called Switchback.
Sure.
They will be our lead band in the afternoon on Sunday.
Well, it sounds like you've thought of everything.
We hope so. We're trying.
Well, it's a wonderful place. I encourage everybody to visit the Art Barn, and this sounds like the perfect time to do it.
It is.
There's a lot to do that day.
It is. It's, you know, the whole idea is we want to, again, inspire and encourage our guests to take up a paintbrush, find that inner artist, and really be able to really get a better feel for what the Art Barn offers.
Sure.
Because we have classes that happen all year long. We have jurored art shows, mm-hmm. Which you were able to experience mm-hmm. when you joined us mm-hmm. earlier this year. And always something is going on at the Art Barn.
Yeah.
Always something.
Well, Lori, thank you for being here to tell us about the Art Blitz. And thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Eye on the Arts.
And you can hear this conversation and previous editions of Eye on the Arts online on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org. And tune in next Monday here on Regionally Speaking for another Eye on the Arts conversation here on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us, and we'll be back with you tomorrow.